So do I have to start this week with an apology?
Maybe not an apology, but I think our listeners probably deserve an explanation because they were wondering where we were. Where did we go for the week?
It was totally my fault. I mean, people should know by now that you do technical stuff. You do it well. If I press a button and it looks like it's working, it works. If something goes wrong, I don't really know what to do. And something went wrong, not just once. So we sat down to record the podcast. At the end, we both said to each other, oh, I really enjoy that. That was a lot of fun. Wasn't it great? I went to send it to you. No sound at all. Like nothing. No sound at all. Nothing.
And do you know what? Part of me thought the way it should be, just me prattling on my own, talking nonsense, loose facts going unchallenged, everything that I dream of. Just that's what it really, this should be a monologue. This
start,
should just be
start of a new podcast.
That's it. And I could have released my side of it, which would just be me talking with no responses from you and just having a lovely chat with myself. But you know, it flashed through my mind until I thought, well, yeah, maybe Gigi does contribute to the pod.
Did you feel the same when it happened the second time?
The second time. Oof, yeah, so we recorded it a second time.
Yeah, we did.
I
felt so bad.
I know, but I'm fairly relaxed. So I knew you kept apologising all day, but I was just sort of like, it's okay. Like, it's just a mistake. It's done, right? It's just nothing that I think. I'm not recording a third time.
Yeah, you did it. You made that very clear. We got really lucky that we were actually the second time we were videoing it, filming it. I don't even know what you call it. So people could watch us do the podcast for Tennis Channel.
Yeah.
So that has been released today as we record this. What day is it? Friday. So on the Tennis Channel app and website under, I think, Tennis Channel International new releases, you can find it. And there's a lot about Cameron Norrie. So if you're tuning in this week for a lot about Cameron Norrie, you might hear a little bit, but you're not going to hear a lot. If you watch the one we did, they will see a lot of you talking about Cameron Norrie and how you knew it was all going to happen and you were right and you could have just stripped that. That could have been your debut pod, could have been you on Norrie, basically.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah. I mean, I was sort of talking about Cam, but I was sort of just bigging up myself as well. A lot of bigging up of Cam, but just bigging up myself, saying I called it. I mean, yeah, I didn't call it that long ago. It's so impressive. It's amazing. I can't believe he's won a slam. He hasn't won a slam. He's won Indian Wells.
Well, you said you won a slam.
It's close enough.
No, but it was because, and if people haven't watched it, don't watch it, won't watch the video version, you compared sort of almost Cameron Norrie doing what he did at Indian Wells to Emma Raducanu winning the US Open, to which I completely disagreed.
Yeah, and I'm very confident that everybody else will disagree as well. But I'm sticking with it. I'm sticking with it.
I did, though, say if he goes on to qualify and win Turin, then I might put it on more of a level because that would be astonishing. That would be ridiculous. I mean, there's so
ridiculous.
So much of 2021. And let me look at the race for a second because we've got both the races to look at. We've got two spaces left. And at the moment, Casper Ruud and Hubert Hurkacz are in those spaces.
Yep.
Yannick Sinner, as we speak, is still alive in Vienna. Cameron
just picked
Norrie
up another title as well. His fifth of the season?
It's ridiculous,
my
isn't
word.
It? Cameron Norrie lost in the round of 16 in Vienna. Felix Auger-Aliassime, as we record this, is on court against Sasha Zverev. Diego Schwartzman's still going strong. I mean, I love it when it gets to this stage of the season and then you go into Paris and really crazy things happen. So if you had to put your pound now on who gets spots 7 and 8, who's getting 7 and 8 for you and going to Turin?
Ruud.
Yeah.
And then it's tough, isn't between it? It's Hurkacz, Sinner and Cam, right? That's who it's between. I mean, that's the order. So yeah. I mean,
Felix.
Oh, he could make an argument for any of them.
Felix could get in there if he wins Vienna, he wouldn't be.
Know, but it's just something about it that I just don't see it. I don't see it at the moment. He'll be there one day, just not this year.
Okay.
And then maybe you could argue that about Sinner as well. Maybe
he'll
be
definitely be there
time.
One day. I mean, 100%.
Yeah, he'll be there
definitely.
Next year.
Yeah.
And then every year after that
for years. Yeah.
For time and time to come. But for Cam and for Hubert, ooh, I mean, it's so tough, isn't it? The numbers are so tight. I mean, Cam has already lost this week, so he's not going. I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? It's a toss-up. I'm going to say that, I think, to be honest, it's going to be Hurkacz or Sinner. So I'm going to say that Hurkacz gets it.
Sinner, if he were to win in Vienna, he would then go above Hurkacz. I mean, he'd have 3,335 points. I mean, he could really take that. To have Berrettini, who's already qualified, and Sinner in Turin would be enormous. But I was looking at some stats of Casper Ruud, who had a 37% win rate on hard courts prior to 2021. This season alone on hard courts, he won 16, lost 27 matches. This year alone on the hard courts, he has a 78% win rate. He's won 21 matches and he's lost 6.
Well, that's because he's just won a lot of matches this year. Just period. Doesn't matter what surface
it's on. Is it that he's won a lot of matches and it doesn't matter what surface it's given him? He's obviously worked at moving his game to the hard courts, but is it also because he's won so many matches, it's just brought that confidence that he's then brought onto the hard courts?
Yeah, look, I personally don't see him as a clay court specialist. I never have. He's obviously a clay court lover. That's his favourite surface. And he is sensible in trying to climb the rankings and get to the top 10 in playing as much on clay as he can and maximising that. But before getting to ATP level, he's done well on hard courts as well, whether it's at Challengers or whatever it may be. He hasn't just played on clay. So, yeah, I'm not super surprised that he's been able to translate his game. Because, you know, he's got one of the biggest forehands out there. I mean, in terms of the revs per second, it's actually insane. Absolutely insane. It's up there with Nadal as sort of the biggest revs per second. Not the biggest pace, that would be Berrettini. But in terms of, it revs per second, it's huge. I mean, actually, you say Berrettini or possibly Basilashvili, to be honest. He was absolutely melting the ball through Indian Wells. So, I mean, that forehand works on any surface, really. I'm not super surprised. As I say, I don't really think that he's a specialist at all. I think that he loves the clay, and we see him at his best on the clay, but he's great on the hard.
Mm. This season just keeps giving you surprises, doesn't it? In terms of, and we've spoken about this a lot, the stories. Well, come on, Raducanu, Karatsev, Norrie, and it just keeps going. But one of the matches that people are saying one of the matches of the year was Andy Murray. He got the win over Hubert Hurkacz to get that top 10 win, but it was that Francis Tiafoe epic encounter between the two. And it just puts a smile on your face, doesn't it? It puts a smile on your face to see Murray playing that kind of tennis and lasting and coming out on top in those kind of matches.
I didn't see it. I didn't, not the match. I saw the match. Sorry, that was entirely not what I was trying to say. I didn't see it coming. I did not see that Andy Murray was going to play this level of tennis. Did you? Did you really think that he could be playing at this level week in, week out over the past couple of years?
There's something about Murray, and you sort of don't doubt him because he's got the hunger and design. So much is about having that hunger, even though the body's probably saying, just give me a rest, give me a break.
Yeah.
It's his desire, it's his love, and it's his passion for the game. I think there's such massive factors. Not only does he treat his body like a temple and he does everything to be as good as he can be, but it's just his love of it. Do you know what I mean? It's that passion he has for tennis. I think that can also make that difference. The fact he wants to be out there. And I love the goals he sets himself. So his goal was to test himself against the very best, to beat a top 10 player. And he's just setting those little increments of what he wants to do. And to play a match like that against Francis Tiafoe, Hurkacz was a top 10 win, but to play like he did, I just think it's really nice to see. I don't know how long he can sustain it for. That sounds a bit daft because you think, if he's playing at that level, he can continue. I don't know if he can, but I think he's been quite sensible, hasn't he? He said that the Davis Cup was never something he wanted to do because he wants a proper shutdown pre-season, time with the family to get himself. He's learned, hasn't he? He's learned that you cannot do what he did in 2016 because it's damaging. He's older, bits of him are now made out of metal, and he's got to think about things differently.
Yeah, and he's got to use the limited off-season that he's got to develop a bit more physically. He can't just be trying to piece his body back together. And you look, Davis Cup 2019, that didn't end well. The hits where he picked up the groin injury, and that had him out for a lot longer as well. So, yeah, I think it seems to be a smart move. But the body looks like it's getting stronger. I mean, I think I've said from the beginning, if it's possible, Andy will do it, because that's just his mindset. Whatever is possible for him to do with that hip, with his situation, he will get there. Like, if he can, he will. Of course he will. And we're seeing that now. It's just, I thought that we would see him back. I did think we would see him back consistently. But, yeah, I mean, the level of movement, because his game was just so based off his movement, because he was so fantastic at anticipating. He understands the sport, you know, almost better than anybody. He just feel like he knew where his opponents were going. He would make them go into a certain area. You know, he'd just hit a short ball and say, "Go on, then try and hit a winner. Watch me hit a running forehand pass." Like, that's just sort of the way that he went about it. And to then think, okay, well, even if he gets his movement back to the best it could possibly be, it's still not going to be what it was. It's like, you know, and then plus, you know, the game moves on, new guys come up, you know, and whatever. It's nonsense. It's just nonsense what he's doing at the moment. Now he's just like, yeah, fine, I'm playing at this level. And, you know, he's playing at a top 20 level. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I think it's helped now the body is healthy to have that run of games, you know, to play week after week and to get that tennis in him, and I think it is that love of tennis. He lives it. For some people, it's a job, and I've met footballers over the years. They're so talented, but it's a job. You know, they go home in the evening and they switch off. They don't watch it. They don't play FIFA. It's a job. They go to work. Like a lot of people, they go to work, they do their job, they come home, they do something else. You know, that it doesn't, you can be very talented at something, but it doesn't mean it's your passion or you live it and breathe it. And you see some tennis players like that. They are either out there to make money, that some have been vocal about. You know, they're good at it, so I'm just going to do it. Or to travel the world, or it's a means to an end. But you sense, and you he loves it. He loves the training. He loves the traveling. He loves waiting in airports, he said before. You know, all these things that people are like, I really don't want to do that. And I think that makes a difference to see what we're seeing now, because to put himself through what he's put himself through, I mean, it's pretty, you've got to love it, haven't you? Because it's pretty brutal. And most people would have said, you know what, I've done really well. I'm just sort of done now.
Well, he's had every opportunity to stop.
To be done.
For everyone to just say, do you know what, this is a good time. Just, there have been plenty of good times to call it a day. It just sort of, they seem to come every single year, don't they, for him? But he's just like, no, why would I do that? It's madness.
Because I love it.
So, yeah, we're loving it.
You know what, I've started watching, I haven't finished it yet, so it's not like I can give you a review of it. Have you watched that Mardy Fish Netflix documentary?
I have indeed, yes.
So, well, you'll be better at doing this, so I'm only halfway through. I started watching it, that the house was quite, it's half term, but the boys were out doing some pumpkin carving. One came back, he'd carved a face in the front, as you do, and on the back he'd carved a bottom. So he was really proud. He said, "Mummy, look at my pumpkin." I was like, "Great." And it's the usual little triangle eyes and the jagged teeth. And he said, "It's got a bottom." And he turned it around. I was like, "Okay, yeah, excellent." So it's outside the front door with its bottom, and it looks like a bottom facing outwards. But
good.
He's six. He's just got to go for it. Anyway, they were out carving pumpkin bottoms. And so I just happened to be, I was actually tidying their kind of playroom, and I thought, I'm going to put it on. It's quiet. And I was really loving it. I haven't finished it. I think I've got to the bit which it's all about. I didn't really know the background of him and Andy Roddick. I didn't know he was taken under the wing of Roddick's parents. And, you know, it was a very different mindset. And I've got to the bit when he decided he wanted to give it one more shot. You know, he was looking at the tour finals. He was going to change everything about himself, and it kind of links back a little bit to stuff we've been talking about with Medvedev, with Norrie over the years, and more recently about making those decisions to change those little things. You know, what's the best I can eat? What's the best I can train? What's the best? I don't know how you were like when you were training. If you ever, I don't know if you sat in your room and ate pizzas at night, or whether you ate the best. I don't know. I'm really fascinated by these people that say, I'm really good at something, but now I'm going to make everything absolutely perfect. And that's the bit I had to stop it, because then the pumpkins arrive. But That's where I'm at. Does it get better? I'm enjoying it.
It's really interesting. It's really fascinating. And you just sort of, you know, because you only ever really watch them play tennis, right? You just watched a lot of Marty Fish playing and really enjoyed watching him play. But you have no understanding as to the behind the scenes thing. But I think that all falls into, you know, I don't think it's actually to do with the details. I think you're absolutely spot on. But I don't think it's the actual action of sorting out the details. I think it's more just the mentality that they get to a point where they just say, I'm taking charge. I'm doing this. I'm going to get there. And this is how I'm going to do it. And they just hit that point where that is the entire focus. They've got their blinkers on. They get the right people in place. And it's just, or whether they've got them already, but it's just them saying, right, I'm ready now to take this to the next level. And it comes from them as a person, and they are taking control of every element of what they're doing and understanding that responsibility. And it happens for different people at different times. You know, some people have it from quite early on, and for others it's slightly later in the career. Or like Marty was saying, when he decided, right, one more crack at this, one more proper crack at this, and actually knuckled down more than he ever had before. You know, we've seen transformations for somebody like a Dan Evans, for example. Yeah. He really just said, right, okay, this is what I'm doing. He's reached the semifinals of a Masters event. You know, and you really do see that with a lot of players. Of course, you've got to have the ability. There's no good somebody who's not good enough saying, right, I'm going to do that. I mean, it's not going to work out very well, unfortunately. So it's not 100% to do with the mentality. You know, a lot of people think positively about things. It only works out for the people who can, I'm afraid. But yeah, for me, it's less about the actual eating better, but more about the headspace that you're in to start making those decisions and the reason for making those decisions.
Does that help the headspace though? If you tell yourself, right, I'm eating the right things and I'm doing it all contributes, doesn't it? So you've got to be in the right headspace. But then if you're in the right headspace but eating three pizzas, then that's not going to, it's everything, isn't it? If you think, right, I'm eating right, and you're putting the kind of building blocks in place to be the best. And the best you can be might not, I think we assume, well, if you don't get to world number one or a slam, you're a disappointment. But someone like Milos Raonic has always done the best he could do to wring every ounce of talent out of his body. And that's been a fantastically successful career. No, he hasn't won a Grand Slam. No, he hasn't been number one in the world. But I think everyone's got different limits of Basilashvili decided, right, this is the time, went with Yandovit, won back-to-back 500s, and will end up having a very good career. So I guess it's just you, I guess as well, and I don't know if you ever thought this, but you have to work out in your head where you realistically believe you can get to with doing everything right.
Yeah, you've got to be realistic, know where you're at, know where you're going, and know what it takes to get there, really. And for some people, they go, oof, not sure it's worth it. I'm happy where I am. Other people say, right, and I can do that. I can do that. I can get there. I really want to get there. You know, and for others, they'll say, yeah, I can do that. I just don't fancy it. Or others will go, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can. You know, and it's good to have those sort of conversations. They tend to happen sort of in off season. You have a bit of time to reflect when you're on holiday. You're gearing up for the new year, whatever it might be. But yeah, it's something that you can't fake. It has to really, really come from within for it to really make a big difference to you. But, you know, you walk out on court. This is a sport where, you know, coaching's not allowed. You're out there on your own. It's gladiatorial. You've got to figure everything out on your own, even though coaching happens every single match. I mean, just every single match, whether it's men's, women's, juniors, dubs, whatever it is, it happens. But ultimately, you're pretty much out there on your own. And you know, you have to have that sort of autonomy over what you're doing. You can't, you know, if you're off the match court and you walk onto practice session and you say to your coach, like, right, what are we doing today? You're just not taking ownership over your own game, over what you're doing. You need to walk on the court and say, right, I want to work on this. This needs to improve. I want to do this amount of reps. You list off a couple of things you want to do. And then to your coach, say, right, you know, anything else you want to add in, like, that's what it is. It's a collaboration with you leading it, and that's it. But the amount of players that will just walk on court, do a session with a coach, and pretty much just look at them being like, make me better, And then at the end of the session, I'll be better than I was at the beginning of the session. And thanks very much. You know, and that happens all the way through. But that's where you're always going to be limited because, you know, you're not driving in the right direction.
How much can you realistically change in an off season? If you got to the end of 2021 and said, I want to be a better player, I want to maximize my potential, I want to change everything about myself. What can you realistically do in the time you have before you start again?
You know, look, you don't have long. You know, the standard sort of time scales people would say is that to improve an element of your physicality and to sort of bed it down so that you have made those gains and they are set, it takes about 6 weeks. And it's pretty similar with learning a skill. So if that's technical or sort of your footwork patterns or something like that, doing those repetitions, it can take sort of 6 weeks. You know, a lot of players just not going to have that luxury of that amount of time because they're going to take, because you need to have a holiday. It's so important. You know, you've got to take that break, come back refreshed, and try and develop. I mean, it depends on how people do it, really. You know, I've known, what, so for example, a coach and a player who was ranked sort of in the top 50, they approached the off season and said, right, he needs to improve his returns. That's the aim. Everything else is, you know, just going to tick over, and obviously we're going to do some stuff, but the main work is on the return. So there was a couple of footwork patterns, particularly on like the body backhand jammed return. It's a very technical return. That's one of the most tricky ones to execute. No surprise, the best returner in the world is the best at that, Novak Djokovic. But it is very tricky because, you know, it's difficult physically. So you've got the movement patterns you need to get right. You've got the physical side of things you need to develop. And you've got, you know, the reps you need to get in terms of the shots. But there's no point in just doing loads of reps on it. It won't get better. You need to physically strengthen up in whichever area you need to with that. You need to practice the footwork patterns. So you're going to be doing all that in the gym. That will take a few weeks, and then you can start really firing in the reps once you've sort of got that, and then you can bed it in and hope that it becomes sort of autonomous by the end of the block, and then you'll be sort of good to go. But that's just one shot, you know, that will take you, and that's not even one, that's not returns, that is a specific body backhand jammed return, and you're talking about spending hours on that each day to try and improve it, whether that is physical, technical movement patterns, or then just doing the reps in the end. On top of that, you're going to want to do lots of point practice. You want to do general fitness as well. We heard a lot about Team with his sort of Rocky style training out in the woods. You want to come back in great shape as well. So, you know, most players, I think, will, you know, do a lot of the general stuff, try and improve the basics, and they'll have maybe one specific that they really want to improve. If they say, right, you are winning, so for the season, you won 49.6% of your second serve points. We need to get that to 50%. And actually, when it comes to averages, the amount of points you play, the amount of matches you play through the season, that 0.4% is quite tough to do. Mm. You have to look at those areas, the placement, whatever it may be. Your coach will come up with a plan, and then you'll tackle it from there. But yeah, it takes a while. But that's where we see, you know, somebody like a Djokovic. He's now, oh God, I'm going to say 15 years into a career, but it's probably longer than that. 15 years into a career, and we see him come back a better player every single January. He turns up to Australian Open and something is better. You know, something, you know, whether he's more flexible or you know, technically on certain shots, we see them evolve. We see Roger Federer, how much he's improved that backhand when it's been kicked up high. I mean, there's so many different things, but any of the top players will start January a better player than they finished the season before. And that's just their mentality. It's just trying to develop something.
So the question to you is, will we see Novak Djokovic in Australia in January? There's the question.
Don't ask me.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. Ask Novak.
You've got to have a thought, because this, for people who don't know, Djokovic has said he will not be revealing whether or not he's been vaccinated. And that side of things, I agree with you. You know, it's your choice whether you get vaccinated or not. You know what? It's up to you. I hope people do, but I totally agree. It's people's choice. But when it comes to the Australian Open, if what they're saying is, if you have had your vaccinations, so let's pick a player who has. Do we know anyone who 100% has? Who I'm just going to pluck out their name. They will just get on the plane, get off it in Melbourne, and live life as normal. Whereas if you haven't had your jabs, you're going into a hotel. So Djokovic is like, I'm not going to tell you if I have or haven't. Well, we're going to find out if he's stuck in an Australian airport hotel for 2 weeks that he hasn't. So I, my thing with that, again, it's not about he has to, he doesn't have to. I think he should just say it, because if he doesn't go to Australia, surely it's because he hasn't had them. It's not going to be any other reason, right?
Well, yeah, but then we just, like, that's all we can do is wait and see.
But I just don't
know. We will find out at some point. We will know by day one of Australian Open whether he's had his jabs or not.
But he could shut it down so easily. If you're so passionate about something, so what are you passionate about? What would you say you're very... I was trying to think. I was about to say Christmas, but you're not, are you? I've sent you a Christmas tree.
But yeah, we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? And it's just, it's up to him to... If I were him, I would shut it down and just to stop the chat and say, look, this is the plan.
If you're so passionate about something, if you're so passionate about something that you don't want to do something, for instance, then just say, okay, people, I don't want to for these reasons, and that's it, and it's done with.
Maybe he's not that passionate about it. I don't know. Is he that passionate about it? He's been outspoken on it, but is he really that passionate about it? I don't know. Maybe he goes, all right, whatever.
It's going to be a tough one for him if he's got a dilemma here, because with the vaccination, because of, you know, he's had opportunities to go past 20. He hasn't, for different reasons. He's on 20 now. If Nadal comes back, then Roland Garros, he's going to be wanting to go for that one. Wimbledon, you would say, yeah, Novak Djokovic, Wimbledon. US Open, we've had different winners. Now you've got the new breed actually winning Grand Slams. So Medvedev's like, I've done it. I've done that really tough thing. And I've crossed the finish line and I've beaten one of the best players to do it and I've succeeded. So they've got the confidence and belief. So a little bit like we saw with Serena Williams, you know, it's now, and on the men's side, we were like, no, it still belongs to X, Y, and Z. These other guys have now got that belief that they can do it. The other players have seen other players doing it. And it's, look, Djokovic is still the best when he's at his best that there is. But it's going to start getting harder for him. Would you agree?
It is, yeah. But I don't think that he underestimates that. I don't think that he takes winning any Grand Slam for granted at all. And I think, especially now with what they're talking about, saying that potentially you could go unvaccinated and just quarantine, I'm sure he'll probably just do that. Like, if he doesn't want to get vaccinated. He did it last year and he won the thing, so it can't have been that bad. So, but
I think that's, yeah, I mean, I just think then just say, I'm going to do quarantine. I don't know why he's making it such a mystery, because we've got a situation coming up when it's going to be fairly obvious one way or the other. So I'd just be like, just, you know, here we go. This is where I stand. This is what I'm going to do. Either see you in Australia or I'm not going.
He's probably waiting for the actual rules to come out, because even we don't really know. We've heard the sort of the latest, but... You know, is that entirely official and that's set in stone and that's what's happening?
It seems to be that the media and the players have been told that as of now, today, this moment, if you've had two vaccinations, you won't have to quarantine. Qualifying will be in Melbourne, won't be in the Middle East. The charter flights might still happen, but you can make your own travel arrangements and you can pretty much arrive from the... You still, again... People willy-nilly can't go into Australia, but if you apply and you get the authorization to go from a media or a player point of view, you can live your life as normal from the moment you step off the plane. I mean, unless there's a surge in cases, I don't see them rowing back on that, because they want to resume to a sense of normality. And I guess what the Australian Premier is saying, that why should the people who are going there have to have had their vaccinations and be watching players who haven't? And I sort of get that. You know, because Australia's been through the absolute ringer, really, in recent months. So, but then, as we've talked about tennis, it's just very different to other sports. But it could change again. I find that one quite interesting. We're just going to keep talking about it. Or I am.
Yeah. I'm just sort of like, well, we'll just wait and see. He'll make his decision on the information he's got. Hey, so I was going to ask you, because it's half term fun for you this week, isn't it?
Yes, has been.
How was IKEA?
IKEA was amazing. A lot of my friends, no, genuinely was amazing. I'm just exhausted. It genuinely was amazing. A lot of my friends said, what are you doing? You're crazy, you're silly woman. You're going to IKEA at half term. Because a lot of parents use it as free childcare because you get the big spacious aisles, the beds and sofas they can sit on, a sort of toy section, and then sort of hot dogs at the end. It was amazing. It was empty. It was empty. I don't know what's happened. IKEA was empty. So the boys kept going into all the kitchens, sitting on the beds. They weren't, I don't want people to imagining my boys were just going hell for leather round IKEA, but they were kind of walking into the kitchens, opening the fridges, saying, Mummy, what about this kitchen and this? And they were loving themselves.
Did you end up buying a new kitchen?
No, but I bought loads of stuff that I generally don't need. You know, you get those bags and you say, oh, look, I need that container. I don't need that container. You know, and then there's the marketplace.
It's always the lure, isn't it, of a more organised life, I find.
Yeah.
All these sorts of, it's container and organising boxes and drawer separation. And you think, I could live a more organised life. I mean, it's never going to happen. I buy it and I'm not an organised person. I get by on minimum requirements when it comes to filing paperwork at home. I have very general categories that it goes into.
Yeah,
I also have a big pile of post currently that is waiting to be organised.
Oh, is it?
It's sort of my biannual thing. Every 6 months I'll sit down and organise everything into the relevant categories. But I feel like that's sort of passable as general life admin. It's not just all in a big pile, is it? I've got a good sort of like 12 folders of different things going on.
Oh.
But anyway, that's for me, that's it. Somewhere like IKEA, I would end up with just so much stuff that it's the lure of I'll be walking out there thinking I'm gonna be so organized. I spend a whole day organizing it at home, and then by the end of the weekend it'd be out the window.
I like bags and boxes, and I buy candles. I'm not a really a massive candle person, but their candles look so nice. And
I could be into candles.
Yes,
I'm going to be into candles now.
A couple of candles go in there. And then I've got...
I've had one candle in my house that just... I mean, we've had it
dust
since we moved
it.
In 6 years ago. Yeah, you have to burn all of that away to light it. I think once a year I might put it on. I might light it. But like... Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I just walk around going, I could be into candles. And candles are expensive.
I'm like, oh, toffee crumble candle. That smells, sounds delicious. Well,
lovely.
And then the boys.
You've got to get one for Christmas, haven't you? With Christmas smells.
You have to have like the mulled wine candle or the fir tree candle. And the boys, when I'm not looking, are putting things in the bag. Things that they don't even know what they are. So there's the marketplace at the bottom, which is when the eyes widen. And I'm taking things, again, that I genuinely don't need. And the boys are picking things up. They don't know what they are and putting them in the bag that I don't realise. So then you get to the check. Oh, you know what I tried for the first time? Have you ever had a dime bar?
Yeah.
So I've never had one in my life. I've never had one ever.
Well, for the Europeans, they're now they're dame bars, aren't they? They're now called dame bars.
Is that how you have to say it?
Well, they used to be D-I-M-E in this country. They used to be dime bars, and now it's dame.
Dime.
Dime, anyway, it's spelled different.
They're Swedish. I'd never had one. Now they're doing a limited edition chocolate orange version for Christmas. So I bought some. You have to buy meatballs at IKEA because you have to, because they're great. I ended up with, my mum came and the boys, my mum kept saying, do you need that? Do you think you need that? Do you really need that? As I was like piling stuff in. But it was amazing. There was no one in it. Boys loved it. They got some sort of toy thing at the end of it. Back in the car, they were exhausted. Mum, when can we go back to IKEA? I'm like, well, you know, another time. So it was great. My objective this half term was to do as many indoor things as possible because we've had 18 months of everything being outdoors and really cold. And I think I'm still recovering from the cold. So I've done a week of lots of indoor with friends IKEA type shopping things, and it's gone well. I'm tired. I'm very happy that school starts again on Monday. And we're not working together next week, are we? We're not working anywhere near each other next week, are we?
No. Well, speaking of indoors, it is the indoor season
at
the moment.
Hey.
And Yes, we've had Antwerp. Cluj is going on at the moment in Romania. So I've been following that one. Emma Raducanu back playing, back winning as well. Speaking Romanian, because why not just tick another box? As if there were any more boxes to tick.
I mean,
why
amazing.
Not? We just create a new box for a third language and tick that one as well.
Incredible.
But yeah, she's out there. Potential. She plays Marta Kostyuk tonight. So this will come out after she's played Marta.
Yep.
But if she wins that, could potentially be looking at a semi-final with Simona Halep. And wouldn't that be awesome for the Romanian tournament? They've got their absolute superstar in Simona Halep. They're going to clearly adopt Emma as an honorary Romanian, which is fair enough. Her dad's Romanian. She speaks Romanian. I mean, as long as they remember that she's British, it's fine. And but I mean, how cool would that? I mean, it would have been an even cooler final. But just it's just nice, isn't it, when it works out like that for the home tournaments and the home players. And it would be really cool.
And let me ask you, while you're talking about Cluj, and we mentioned the ATP race for the finals to the WTA finals in Guadalajara.
Oh, yes.
Annette Kontaveit. Now, there's one place left, isn't there? There's one place left in the race, because I think Paula Badosa got the most recent place. And it's between Onjibur, who holds it, because Ash Barty withdrew. So it goes down to Onjibur has got it. If Annette Kontaveit, who's into the semi-finals in Cluj, wins the tournament, she will go 40 points ahead of Onjibur into the final spot.
Ooh, I mean, Annette's had a fabulous year. Wow, so has Ons. I mean, they've both. Either one, I think, would be fantastic to have them there. Absolutely. I think, Annette's just been churning through the wins. She's done it quite quietly. You know, it's not like she's been at the very back end of slams and, you know, in a slam final or, that sort of thing. But she has just churned out the wins just over and over and over again. Just such quality. So delighted to see her doing so well. And Ons has just been fabulous as well. I couldn't choose a favourite between the two of them. Either way, they'll be bringing an awful lot to Guadalajara.
That's a tough one, isn't it? So, yeah, so next week we will be joining up together and you will be indoors covering Paris.
Yes, absolutely. Paris Bercy. Yes.
And I will be indoors covering the Billie Jean King Cup Finals 18 months from when it was first scheduled to be played. It is happening in Prague. I'm covering it remotely from the UK. Looking forward to it. There's been a few players. Look, it's a difficult time of year, isn't it? Because you've got players who are injured. You've got players who are maybe looking at the WTA finals, like Badosa and Muguruza recently withdrew. So it's a difficult time to have them because of the time of year and the year that we've had that's been so tough. But it's wonderful that they're actually staging them. So really looking forward. So that's going to be an interesting one next week for both of us, because we'll kind of link up and be watching for the first time very different tournaments.
Yeah, and we'll have loads to talk about because we'll be across all of the action.
I got to leave you now, though, because I have promised one of the boys that I will build a Lego city. Not a house, not a car, a city.
You live near Legoland? Can't you just take him there and be like, there you go, it's a city. It's a whole land.
Well, A, it's a little bit late, shut. But yeah, I could do. But I have promised our Friday night excitement is going to be building. And he wants to go. I can't just build a little house and say, isn't that wonderful? He wants to go the full thing. So
That's cool. Well, send me a picture.
Yeah, it might not be for a couple of days. It's going to take a while. So I'm off to build a Lego city, and we will chat again next week in the midst of a couple of different tournaments.
Yes, then.
I'm looking forward to it. Bye. Happy Halloween.
Bye.